All right. Why do you do what you do? Why do you do what you do? Because? Because you want what you want. Turn, if you will, to the Issues in Counseling Philosophy notes here. There was a quote, and I don't remember who gave you this quote, but he said this. I know our former senior pastor, Pastor Goode, used to say this. I don't know if he originated it, but he said, behind every secular psychology is an unbiblical anthropology. Behind every secular psychology is an unbiblical anthropology. I'm not meaning to be needlessly provocative here, okay? But without the Word of God and without a view of how God made man inherently, when you're looking at man and trying to make determinations about what his causes of his problems and cures are, without the Word of God, you will always come to an unbiblical view of man, and you will come to unbiblical solutions as well. So that quote is not meant to be pejorative or adversarial. It's just the truth behind every secular. Secular means, without considering the religion, behind every secular psychology is an unbiblical anthropology. And because of that, then every psychology out there will come to false conclusions about who man is and false conclusions about the causes and cures of his problems. So here is the root issue. In every psychology, what is the nature of you? Who are you? What makes you up? That is the root question that drives everything else. Now, in clinical psychology, the two buzzwords are now, you are made up of external features, that they call that nurture. Things like popular philosophies, your education, your parental influence. So the things external to you, your nurture, and then your nature, and by that they mean your biology and your chemistry. So you are made up of nurture, external features, and nature, your biology and your chemistry. As we discovered last night, there is something missing to that. If there is something immaterial called the heart, they don't consider that at all because they start from a secular worldview about man. So, a theorist answers to the question about what makes you you, then shapes every aspect of the causes and cures of your problems. And when he goes down the path, a theorist about who you are, and what is your problems and what are the cures, all of that reflects his epistemology, which is a fancy word to say, what is his source of truth? Is it experience? He knows these things because of his experience. He knows these things because of his intuition or reason or science or revelation. Psychology has placed itself in the realm of science. That is problematic. Because how do you measure the intensity of the inner man, if there is one? How do you measure the intensity of emotions? But then I'm trying to diagnose people on the basis of that. I told you my testimony yesterday. I am a scientist by trade. We know what makes an airplane fly, correct? And I designed one for my senior aircraft design. We know what makes an airplane fly. When Jay Adams was pioneering the reaffirmation of biblical counseling in the Bible is sufficient for everything, I don't know where he got his information on this particular aspect, but he said something like, there are over 250 different counseling theories. And what that tells you is that there is a growing proliferation of counseling theories out there. So there is not a growing consensus. Now, what if there were 250 different theories about what made an airplane fly? Would you want to get on that plane? We are entrusting our lives to theories of which we really don't know. And don't take my word for it. I will show you that in just a moment from their own words. So a theorist then wrestles with the question is, what is normal or abnormal behavior? And that is a huge question. Why are you guys normal? Or why is your friends abnormal? And who gives the right to assign that? Think about that seriously. What is a normal human being? And because there is no objective standard, then the theories go everywhere. Now, in biblical counseling, we have the most human example ever. And who is that? Jesus. If we want to know what a human should be, we look at Christ. And they don't have that. What is the standard of humanity? Why is schizophrenia not normal? Who decides that? Why is manic depression not normal? And who is deciding that? So a theorist wrestles with the question, what is normal human behavior? And here are the criteria for psychological disorders. If you look at your like four-point font at the bottom of your notes there, I got these definitions from a psychology textbook, so I didn't make these up. So the criteria for a psychological disorder, if you're maladaptive, meaning that you struggle in social relationships, interpersonal relationships, that you have some kind of abnormality in your behavior, maybe there's some bizarreness about you, or you have personal distress, and by this they mean emotional distress. If you have these things, then somehow there is the possibility of a psychological disorder. But again, the question is, here is the question. How should a person function in personal relationships? What is normal behavior and what is distress? Because there are no answers to this, the entire system collapses and there is confusion. Okay, now you say, Brent, why should I trust you? You're a redneck Baptist pastor, okay? And from Oklahoma at that, I mean, my goodness. Don't trust me. Let me read it to you in their own words. Let me give to you the article. This is now a dated article. It's 10 years old. Right after this, I'll give you one from last year. But Dr. Gary Greensburg, a PhD practicing psychotherapist, he wrote in December 27, 2010. He interviews Dr. Alan Francis, who was the basically, he was the author of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual number 4. That was the encyclopedia of mental disorders that became a bestseller, and everybody loved it because you had a Bible, you had a book to tell you what you had. It was authoritative in their mind, or seemed to be. And it was so comforting to know that if I want to know what ailment I have, I can just go look it up in a book. It was the Encyclopedia of Mental Disorders. And because we love sequels, there has to be a 5, right? So there was a 4, and now there has to be a 5. So all of this happened. Daryl Regier, he was the task force leader to come up with the 5th version because the 4th didn't quite do it all. And then James Scully was the medical director of the American Psychological Association. So here is, in their own words, there is no definition of a mental disorder. I mean, you can't define it. This is from the guy who defined it. He wrote the book. I know we're laughing, but this is what he said. And he wrote the book, defining it. What the battle over the sequel should tell us, professional and laymen alike, is that psychiatric diagnosis will probably always be laden with uncertainty, that the labels doctors give you for your suffering will always be the product of negotiations around a conference table, as well as investigations at a lab bench. They're trying to make it scientific. Regier and Scully are more than willing to acknowledge this. As Scully puts it, the DSM will always be provisional. That's the best we can do. Regier, for his part, says the DSM is not, what does it say? Oh my goodness, Freudian slip right there. They didn't know this quote would get in the hands of a redneck Baptist pastor. So, when they're reaching for something authoritative, their mind instinctively goes to the Bible. They further say this, it's not written on stone tablets. I don't know if these men were believers or not. I'm not trying to make fun of them. They're sincerely trying to help people. But when they're reaching for something authoritative, look where they went. The real problem is that insurers, juries, and yes, patients aren't ready to accept this fact that the DSM is not authoritative, nor are psychiatrists ready to lose their authority when they derive from seemingly possessing a book that says we have the answers. Now, that's that. In 2019, there was an article from the University of Liverpool. This is not some kind of Christian